Papa well, we're having a memorial service, and everyone I'm sure was invited to it. And before we start with the meeting, we have that conversation with you. The committee on women, children and persons with disabilities invited us to a hearing of their tomorrow. I'm not sure whether it's a hearing or whether it's just at a public hearing, they say. The Department of Education will be speaking to them on people with disabilities. You know, what is the department doing? That's on Wednesday, the 22nd of August. From 9:30 to 13 hours in committee room 290 Plain Street. So those who are free may go. And I ask Alan just to send this out to each member to serve as a reminder. Because it will be interesting to hear what the partners will say that evening. Because as we know, there's no synergy at national level. When it comes to persons with disabilities, you know, with our full service and special schools, and what does that mean at ground level? There's no synergy. We saw who we were in the workshop. So I'm very interested to hear what the discussion was about in that committee.
Listen.
And then, yes?
Sorry, just on that, is it possible for those of us who cannot attend tomorrow, is it possible for us to be emailed the documentation that would be handed out?
I'm thinking sure will be done.
Thank you.
Because this will be a public document once, you know, they speak within that committee. And then before we start, I just want Mr. Honourable Mr. Shishi just to tell us what happened in the football with these three learners.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, all of the members. We just had the bad news of three children being brutally killed on Saturday. We heard that they missed on Wednesday. They didn't know where they are, and they found them on the field near the town. And then the girl was in grade 4 and two boys was in grade 3. And the girl was raped, and then one of the boys didn't have eyes. And then the private part was not there. So they're still investigating. There is a touching that is going on. And then I just heard that on the way, on the day, thank you very much.
Fine, it's a pleasure. I just read the paper. And Honourable Shishi just spoke to me for a few minutes. And now the task team is from education.
Yes, it's a community, the education for everybody. And then it's in a constituency. And it's in Limpopo.
I think what will be important, our members that's in Limpopo, the honourable members, those that won't be at the memorial service, if there's a funeral this week, in the coming weekend, then I'd like our members that's in Limpopo to attend, if they can. Thank you. I'll hand over to the department. And then,
sure.
Of course,
IFP.
Yes,
my dear. Oh,
honourable member.
Sure. May I, on behalf of the IFP, express our condolences on those three learners who have passed away in such a brutal manner. Thank you.
In Nagriyalu, Makhubu Wanaru.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, it's a terribly, terribly sad thing to have happened in South Africa, and we just hope that the motive is uncovered. and certainly that action is taken so that the perpetrators are brought to book.
Honorable chairs and honorable members, good morning. I am with the manager who is responsible for issues of education, human resource planning, provision and monitoring, Mr. Ritulet. We have provided the committee with an allocation to the presentation so that we can in-depth engagement in that regard. We have further provided the committee with the following documents: the district-based recruitment strategy, the national education human resource planning framework, as well as the integrated strategic planning framework for design facing and development. In introducing the subject, fisher demand and supply, the key important aspects that I want us to go to, which are the factors that influence fisher demand, which are the enrollment trends of learners, which affect the fisher people ratio, the attrition rate, which is approximately at 3.2%, which means it is approximately 12,500 educators. On the other side, around the teacher supply, it's more about the adequate supply of teachers with required skills and competencies and ensuring the optimal utilization in an effective manner. That will talk to the appointment nature of teachers, and that will also talk about the age distribution of that cohort of educators, which by far, when we look in terms of the mean, it will tell you that those educators who are between 50 to 59%, 50 to 59 in terms of the age, are around 23%, but those that are between 40 to 49 of age are around 40%. And those that are above 60% and above are 2.2% in terms of the report that we are combining. As soon as that report is available, we'll be able to distribute. We are now going to make the presentation based on the request that honourable members raised in the workshop. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Just a minute, Stephen. I see you got an admission, but it's confidential. It's anonymous. Why are we seeing it?
Why is it confidential?
Yes, that annotation that we received from the presentation is for members when we do the presentation to have an in-depth view around the filling of vacancies from the principal, because you have that from the presentation. We'll talk maybe more on the teachers, but it is giving you a broad range of what the presentation is about.
So our document is now public documents, even the confidential. All right, thank you. All right, over to you then. Thank you. Good morning to the Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Our presentation today covers the broad aspects with regards to the efficient management of HR planning in the education sector. We will then look at specifically in terms of the filling of vacancies, the appointment of temporary educators, the placement of those on the Shaka graduates, and the appointment of teachers and the qualifications of those teachers under the age of 30. We conclude this presentation by looking at the interventions that we have placed on the table to address these challenges. To achieve the efficient management of education human resources in the sector, we need to have the safety management of teacher demand supply utilization. This, of course, is critical. Our main motivation to address these currently is the negative impact that the poor management of human resource planning has had on the compensation budget. But it is more than that. It is actually about the effective deployment of educators, which is now critical for the overall improvement of the quality of education. We therefore decided that it would be a holistic approach in terms of the identification and addressing these challenges with regard to demand, supply, and utilization of educators. And that is the approach that we've taken. The challenges can be identified in two aspects, the first being human resource planning, and the second being human resource management and administration. Specifically with regard to human resource planning, we found that there's a history of a lack of formal human resource planning processes and management of human resource information. Critical information like the subject specialization and levels of qualification of teachers is still not accessible to planners at district level, provincial, and national. It is, however, available at school level. The consequence of that is the situation where teacher demand, supply, and utilization is that this process cannot be effectively managed in a systematic way. Human resource management and administration, we found that the HR management practices are not effective, nor are they efficient at the level of PD. The effective management of post-provision has also had a negative impact on the recruitment of educators and the deployment process overall. We've got challenges with regard to the identification and redeployment of excess educators, and of course the high levels of utilization of temporary appointments. There's also a great deal of contradiction that seems to exist between the shortage that is
in terms of... May I intervene? Possible. Let's just put a request to present the traits. To take some time to explain some of the work to take over that we understand. She's saying the challenges, human resource management are not effective and efficient. Just to explain that to us, what that means, not just to please.
Thanks for that, because I was under the impression that was the last challenge of that go along. But if you can do it, give an explanation. Because those are the questions that will be asked if you are not going to do it now. Thank you. Yes, check us out. In terms of the HR management practices, we are looking at, I can give you several examples, but to identify one, if you're looking at a teacher coming into the system, that teacher needs to be captured onto our main PASEL system, I mean our main HR system called PASEL. Now this practice of capturing the information so that we can pay that teacher timely is not effectively done. So what the PASEL practitioners would do is they would capture the minimum information so that the person can be paid. So important information like the qualifications of the teachers and what that teacher is qualified to teach is not captured. Even though it's a mandatory field, it's not effectively captured. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is the actual recruitment process. We've identified at National that PEDs need to take a maximum of 3 months to place educators. Now that is not being done. So what the PEDs actually do is they appoint teachers into posts in a temporary capacity, and that is then not converted into a permanent capacity. So we have a very large number of temporary educators sitting in substantive posts. The ineffective management of post-provisioning processes, I think that's self-explanatory in terms of you have a basket of posts, and what happens is because PEDs are unaware or do not have accurate data in terms of the posts that are available, they're not able to identify the funded posts. So that's also based on the information that is sitting on PASEL. The contradiction around the coexistence of the reported shortage of educators and the non-placement of funds of the shelter. We hear oftentimes that there is a shortage of math and science teachers. And yet we have got teachers in a group of Funzal Shaka graduates that are math and science trained. So that is the contradiction I'm speaking about. We have them, why are they not being placed in this position? The ineffective management of post establishments due to the efficient maintenance of old structures and the management of payroll. Now the maintenance of the org structure, we at the DVE are currently going through a process of auditing the org structures of all PEDs to ensure that the posts that are sitting on the org structures are funded posts. They are not posts that are sitting there that have been there for the last 3 to 5 years. We're looking at a minimum of 1 year. Those posts that have been there for a long time have to be removed. We're also looking at linking the PASEL with the finance codes on the desk. So, for example, if you've got a person that is sitting on the head of department post, that is one post, which is then linked to the BAS codes and hence the budget. So whomever is sitting on the org structure is who we are paying. So there's a very accurate link between the people that are in post and the compensation budget. There's no bloatedness with regard to that. In terms of the payroll as well, we're doing an audit of the payroll where we are asking all PEDs to document their payroll process from start to finish, and we will then audit that payroll process to ensure that it's an effective process, that it is workable, that it meets the regulations in terms of treasury as well. We then also will be matching the payroll that goes to the principal, that the principal signs off, to say that these are the exceptions that they note. For example, person X has been deceased, or this person has been transferred, or this person has resigned. It will then go to the personnel team to ensure that that has been captured on herself. So there's nobody sitting on the personnel for more than, well, we're aiming for 2 payrolls. So there's nobody being paid when they've already exited the system. In terms of the filling of vacancies, we have advised the PDs that there are there is a cohort of teachers that we know are going to retire at a certain date. We advise them to identify these retirees, profile those posts, and make sure that letters are sent out to teachers who can fill those posts timely. They also, we've advised them to develop contingency plans for those teachers who may pass on or resign. The overall vacancy rate has increased in all of the categories between January and March of this year. And the similar trend that we found in terms of the percentage of schools without vacancies. We started off with a very high percentage where there were fewer vacancies in schools, but that's now increased by much to 12. This is the teacher vacancy rate that we have put together, and you can see, I'm just going to pick out one of the provinces. If you look at the CC Department of Education, in January of this year, they were looking at 2.1% vacancy rate. 2.1% vacancy rate, and that has now gone up to 4.49%. And a similar kind of trend in the other provinces. What I mean there is that
thank you very much. It is more on the schools that were without vacancies. There were more. But from January. But by March, the number of those schools now decreases. Right? Meaning that there are more vacancies than that those schools are now registered. From January up until March. You see in the next slide, it talks about 70.5% of schools that had no vacancies in January, which now is decreased to 38% in March, meaning there's an increase in the vacancy rate, even those schools that did not have vacancies in January.
We have assigned the reason for this to the poor capturing on our HR system itself. What happens is there is a lag between the appointment of a teacher and when it is captured onto the Purcell system. And that's when we draw our report on Purcell. So if it's not captured, there's always a discrepancy between the vacancies that are sitting at schools and those that are filled. So when it is captured on Purcell, then you know that vacancy has been filled. Also, we find that on Purcell, like I mentioned in the earlier slide, we have posts that are sitting on Purcell that are not funded. So we've now started this whole audit of the Purcell, which we are now cleaning up, for want of a better word, so that the posts that are sitting on the cell are funded and they must be filled within a certain period. In this slide, we're looking at the percentage of schools for all allocated posts that are filled. We've discussed this now with Mr. Jana, where we said that the number of schools with more vacancies has increased. Okay, we were sitting at 61% of schools without vacancies in, for example, Eastern Cape, and now we've got more schools that are sitting without vacancies.
This particular slide is actually dealing with the disaggregation of what is spoken about 70.5% to 38% by province. That's what this slide is talking to. Thank you.
In terms of the appointments of teachers in a temporary capacity, we found that has increased as well, where provinces have appointed more teachers in a temporary capacity. In January it was sitting at 8% and that had moved to 12%. And strangely enough, these are all, majority of them are qualified teachers, qualified South African teachers who can effectively occupy substantive posts. It would seem that the PADs have not complied with our guidelines to appoint these teachers, and it could very well be that there are teachers that are sitting in the system who have been employed in a temporary capacity for two or more years. The temporary appointments, an increase across the provinces, Gauteng Department of Education was sitting at 7%, which moved to 9% and now at 11%. And if you look at the national statistics, it has moved from 8% to 10% to 12%, where they were appointed teachers in a temporary capacity. This slide looks at the breakdown of the appointments of teachers in a temporary capacity and the breakdown in terms of whether they're qualified or not. You'll find that in March, 43% of them in the Eastern Cape were qualified, 25% in the Free State by March, and nationally you're looking at 41% of the total population were qualified teachers.
I think this particular slide talks more about the percentages of qualified teachers who have been appointed on temporary capacity. We have done the classification per province. This is just for the period of January up until March. January up until March. Thank you.
The following slide looks at the qualified teachers aged 30 years and below, and you find that there is a total of 3,782 teachers that are in this cohort, and of them we've done breakdown of those that are qualified in each province.
I think this one is much more important to look into the intake of young educators in the position. That's why the age cohort that is about to exit the system. We find that Western Cape is registering the highest number of young qualified teachers who are entering the system, standing at 939. When you look into the Eastern Cape, then there are only 120, which demonstrates that there is a serious challenge. With Gauteng standing at 729, maybe there are issues around the reference of the youth to go to maybe the urban provinces, probably the rural provinces.
Chair, I'm sorry, may I ask a question for clarity? I'm not sure how to react as I'm listening to the presentation, because we are told that a lot of these figures are as Persol generates them, basically. But we're also told that Persol is not being used properly. So in other words, I mean, the number of temporary teachers appointed or the number of teachers appointed generally, these figures might be totally incorrect. They're just as Persol generates them. So are we looking at accurate tables or are we not?
I think
I don't know how to react to these figures.
Ask this question after the presentation.
Yeah.
Because the way I'm sitting here, you know, my first word should have been what you are saying. Because to me, as I'm looking at it, I'm not 100% sure it's accurate. But you know what is happening in the Eastern Cape.
Absolutely.
So let us listen to it and let us look at what the class is telling us. Let us question it. But my other one was, we still need to look at this further on your own. You take the document, you take it back to the office, and you go through it. Because I think we need to have a second bite on this. Because I think this is very important.
It is.
Because this document we
really need to look at.
And it's going to be important that we fish him today, and we pick it up again perhaps in a month's time. So that, you know, we can, because we need a teacher, the triple T. The president speaks about textbooks, teachers, and time. And we need a teacher in front of the class. Thank you, but continue. Because I'm also having a question mark, but we must give you the benefit of the doubt to continue. Because I know personal doesn't speak to us, and that was one of my questions coming up. How are you going to do that? But I think I'll try to leave it and continue. Because even I see, when I look at my work, I can see the queer when she looks up at me with her eyes to the question mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Now, my question is, would you like to serve in the person? That's how I want to put you back for what our peers must serve in the person. Honourable
Bonjour. Well, no, supporting, she mustn't look at the chair like that.
Okay, the next aspect that we're going to look at specifically is the placement of Pumbon Chakra graduates. And currently the PEDs have reported that there's an 86% placement rate of graduates as at the end of May 2012. Now, this excludes buses that have not been placed for whatever reason. People who, you know, they couldn't be contactable or they were unwell, etc. Now, what is important to note is that 59% of those graduates who were available for placement were out of their contractual obligation as at the end of March 2012. And why I say 59% is because when we drew a report from Patel using the ID numbers of the graduates, we found that only 41% were placed on PASAP. Now, there could be many reasons for this, one of which being that the Pumbon Chakra graduate is in the post, but it hasn't been captured onto PASAL yet. But the PDs have indicated that 86% have been placed, and that will now happen over the next few months. An additional 822 Pumbon Chakra graduates were placed from the previous years. So there is a very large uptake of the Pumbon Chakra graduates in the system. Okay, the last part of our presentation, we're looking at the interventions to manage these challenges. And this is the kind of work that is now underway at the DBE. We're currently developing a new national HR planning framework. And in that framework, we've identified the key challenges, our goals and objectives, and the priority areas for intervention are all a part of this document. It is intended to be the basis for HR planning in the provinces. This framework document will be coupled with HR planning tools to support the PE in terms of the management of the demand, supply and utilization of educators. And there's a medium to long term forecasting of demand and supply of educators. There is also the plan to develop a tool to help the provinces to manage this process. The tools will be linked to the post-provisioning model and will support the budgeting for conservation. The human resource management information system, the plan is to ensure that critical data is systematically and routinely captured and that there is accuracy that can be used for HR planning, including the forecasting of demand and supply. Like was mentioned just now, the quality, the accuracy of our personnel data is questionable. We've identified that at the Department of Basic Education, and we have started the process of cleaning up this data. It is a mammoth task, given that PASAL is now about 15 years old. So we are dealing with historically inaccurate data. How have we started this? We have made the fields mandatory on PASAL. So we've also developed the educator information form from our director to ensure that EMIS is capturing data to do with the qualifications of teachers and what teachers are qualified to teach. There's a huge difference in terms of those two aspects. Now, even though we've made those fields mandatory, what's happened is the PASAL practitioners go on to PASAL, and because they are capturing thousands of people at a short space of time, they will go to that particular field. There's a drop-down, and the drop-down is alphabetical. So in order to pay our teachers, they have to fill the field in, but they go and choose a subject that's not necessarily accurate. They will go to name A, which is Arabic, or E, which is English, and they choose that subject.
Just to put something.
Just to put something so we can generate a salary.
Yeah, yeah.
Our E is on top of the list.
Now coming to the
top. Sorry.
So we understand that is a challenge. We've now made that mandatory, and the plan is now to move towards tightening the process of personal capturing by linking it to performance agreements of the people that are sitting with the PASAL delegation and the people who are sitting with the HR delegation, so that we tie them down to the accuracy of the data. That hasn't been the case thus far. But that is a long process. There are lots of complexities involved in. In terms of human resource management and administration and the interventions that we've looked at there, we have put into process or have developed a process to help PEDs to manage FS educators. Now this is an extensive group of people. We are continuing our work in terms of identifying these excess educators, profiling them, helping the PEDs to match them with posts that are sitting on their organization structures that are vacant, and giving them that information to say, look, there's the matches now implement. So that is the level of involvement that we have with the PEDs. We've also looked at those educators that we cannot place into posts. And we're looking at retraining those teachers, and if we cannot retrain them, we're looking at a severance package for those educators that cannot be utilized. We're also currently developing a study to investigate the conducting of post-positioning processes in PD with the intention of reviewing and improving that process. I mentioned to you that we're looking at a new post-distribution model and the development of a tool so that the PEDs can implement post-provision easily. There's continued work with the reduction of the appointment of temporary educators. We have got qualified teachers in the country. These teachers are occupying temporary posts. We've advised PEDs to convert those temporary posts into permanent posts. They're qualified, they're professional, they can do the job. So why not move them from a temporary post into permanent? We are completing a national database of educators seeking employment in public schools, and this is available on our website so that all PEDs can access that. If they have a teacher that they feel can meet the requirements, they get in touch with the DBE and we give them the contact details of that person. That is now available on the website. There is also now an open invitation to all qualified educators to register onto that database, and that stands for September 2012. The placement of Kundalini Shaka verses is the end product of the process of the bursary scheme. We now try to improve and strengthen that Kundalini Shaka process by developing a district, or we have developed and now implementing a district model. The plan is to identify learners of merit in these areas, these hard to teach, these schools that we find posts are hard to fill because people don't want to take those posts. We want to take the learners, the cream of the crop from those areas, give them the Kundalini Shaka bursary, and say to them, now come back and teach in more areas. Mm. Because we, even though we were giving the bursaries, we couldn't get people to take up the posts in these rural schools. And this is an intervention to now address that challenge. We have commenced with the project to clean and maintain the organization structures of BDs and to audit their payrolls. That started in July. We've started the preparatory phase, conferences except for Eastern Cape. We're going there at the end of the month. We have asked provinces to look at their organization structures to ensure that it is funded. We don't want to see unfunded posts. We don't want to see obsolete posts. And all of those posts must be linked to the VAT scores so that we have an accurate compensation report. Payrolls, like I said, documented payrolls, and we're going to be auditing their payrolls, every payroll control sheet from every school in the country. That's the plan. And then those exceptions or inaccuracies will be captured correctly on PERSA.
Sorry, Chair, what is the VAT code actually?
No, but
it's...
Now we'll just speak with that talent bank assistant for finance in...
But I can't understand what the
now
presentation is saying.
We've kick-started the process of editing our HR framework. Framework to help the PEDs with HR planning and provisioning in the provinces. Through this planning at provincial level, we will then determine what are those policies that are now required for us to develop at national level to make this process of HR planning more efficient, more effective. So we have turned the whole process upside down in some way. We're working with provinces. By putting those things in place, we then develop from national level. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the report. I think it's correct that we should receive such reports, even if it's accurate or inaccurate, because we as the committee is here to assist the department. And I thank you for giving this report, because I know it's raising many questions in each and everyone's mind. And then I think before we go into questioning, speak to yourself, each of the self system as everyone else, and each of that system. Because I wanted Honorable Snell to explain to Honorable Lardmore, but I'll ask you to do
that. We would have got into trouble for talking while the meeting was going on.
Honourable members, the PERSA system is our main HR system. This system is married to the finance system called VAS. When we appoint a person on PERSA, that person is linked to 5 relevant VAS codes, which look at, it's called the objective code, the responsibility code, there's a program code, and there's 2 others. But basically what it does is there's a certain amount of money that is linked to a particular program. If somebody is placed in that post, they're also linked to a program and the budget for that program. So when they are linked, and if the code is closely linked, then as they are paid, that money or that compensation budget will then go lower. Currently, that is not happening. So as a result, we get incorrect reports of the money that are sitting in the different programs in terms of the compensation budget. In terms of the objective code as well, they are linked. So when the monies are paid out, they're supposed to automatically decrease. So that's how they are linked. We now, with the process cleanup, insisted on a sign-off copy from head of department of all provinces to say that the dash codes are correctly linked to the organization structure, which historically hadn't happened. Not in all provinces, but certainly in the majority of the states.
So again, what does BEST actually stand for?
I think it is the basic accounting
system.
Thank you. Thanks.
And this is the CLP about the cell and BEST. Because those two systems don't fit each other. That is my problem with that system. They don't speak to each other at all. Let us take questions. Come in, come. There's me now.
Coming
here. And I'll go to Mishwana. And I'll go to Arlo Lagmo. Arlo Mishwana Lagmo. Then I'll go to Smile. Then I'll go to Mahubela. Then I'll come to Arlo Panshana. And I'll go to Arlo Panyako. And I'll come back again to Arlo Mishishi, Arlo Mani. And then last, Honorable Dina,
and Honorable Skosan.
Yes, I know.
How many questions?
Just bring that 1 year.
Got it then.
Yes.
So here is the and now she went to four.
Gentlemen, thank you for the convention, though really the concern that has been raised yesterday, how accurate is the position we're getting, I think it's a question for all of us. But nevertheless, we are going to engage in the questions. Maybe we'll be more even on the more accurate one that we'll be receiving by then. Maybe my first question to Chairperson is very basic and simple. As to say, we have a picture of how many teachers roughly are averaging the system a year, and also how much interest do you have today? Because that one will give us a sense as to how much our challenge is. Going back to the whole presentation, that we'll be having a sense of to say, when we talk of supply and demand, how much challenge is our district at the time. Secondly, I was very interested in the slide with temporary skaters appointment. This one, it can go between. It's not numbered, but it's after the travel assignment, then that's one. After the company for that. This one where they are. The following one? That's one, for me. I then go back to the question that I said, just to say, as this graph or this thing indicates us the challenge that we have to qualify to judge in the system. Because if you look at the college level, if you content and what not, you think, you might think it isn't good. But when you look at it as such, let me make an example with Limpopo, where there's 2%. It's 2% of qualified teachers.
Yeah.
Meaning that a bulk of those teachers are unqualified and they're in the system. As to say, is this really the picture that we're standing at as a country? Do we have so much unqualified teachers in our system? Or else I'm understanding it different, but I think that one surely indicates that we're facing a huge challenge when it comes to qualified teachers and also the delivery of quality education as we always talk about. Chairperson, the issue of placement versus personal versus staff, I take this challenge. But I want to let you go to this weekend. I'll take one example from province KwaZulu-Natal. We are studying it. If funding they are calling a budget for leave payment for people who are on secondment, it's quite huge. It's taking about 5% of the budget allocated to the province. And I'm concerned really if I'm going to see these discrepancies, if these three things doesn't talk to each other, as to say placement, less of the person, if the person cannot talk to the placement down in the province, and also the bus does not, really, it means there's so much that you are wasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to couple that with the issue of the leave catch-up. How are we controlling that? Because really, we are wasting, there's so much money that goes into it. To people on leave and being released by others. We are talking of teachers who are on leave for months. they are paid, both of them, the one on leave and the other. How are we controlling that? Because if we don't have if we cannot regulate that part, really we are not going anywhere, but you are always going to be posting as a country to say the huge budget goes to escape, but is it going to where we need it to go, or as paying for something that we needed? The huge budget that goes to personal secretary, for me, really, it does not add any value the way it is happening. There are so many things that happen that we cannot control as a country, and what measures of making sure that we have a situation. It's only from our care.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me start by appreciating the report. It is a very clear report, but the report that explains everything which is unpalatable in the education system. It is very clear in terms of explanation there before us. Chair, I'm also having a serious concern on issue of qualified and unqualified. I'm not clear whether we are developing as a country or we are not developing. I just want a clarity on that question, because we do have the skills development internally and outside the system, within our education system in the country. Now we talk about 1% of qualified educators, which means 59, according to the statistics, is a problem, which means there are unqualified learners. Really, as we are talking about the federal system, which is incorrect or capturing issues and others not captured, really I don't believe it's true at present. Can I get a sense on this issue of skills development, sir? And also to link the subjects taught by educators at the school level with the system. We have got a new system that has changed some of the subjects. For instance, history is no more history, but it's called social science. At the foundation phase up to senior phase. But I just want to know how are we going to link such subjects. For instance, with the new subject called technology, which ends up around the senior phase in the FET, some schools not offering art and culture, for instance, the new subject. How are we going to link that with these educators? And the skills development that we are given as a department. And also, Chair, lastly, I just want to request you, Chair, talk to our members. While the presenter is busy presenting, let us not interfere with that presentation. Really is disturbing us, because even ourselves who are listening to that person to give us their own information so that we can question and present and whatever. Really is disturbing. Thanks.
We're coming back to Guy, who may be supposed to want to tell you that.
It's Mina.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. While I appreciate the presentation, I'm extremely disappointed in its nature, Chair, because it is so short-term. It is so short-term. The fact that we've been given, like the one on the screen right now, temporary appointments from January 2012 to March 2012, and the trend over months. My understanding was that one of the main reasons why we asked for another presentation, because we had a presentation at Monkey Valley when we had our workshop, one of the main reasons why we asked for another presentation was precisely so that we could get a longer term view of teacher demand and supply in South Africa. Are we in trouble? How much trouble? What are we doing to address that? And that I don't see in this presentation or in any of the lectures at all. I'm very, very concerned at the figures, Chairperson, and I'm quoting the Center for Development and Enterprise, Value in the Classroom, the report, which indicates that we need approximately 25,000 teachers a year to replace those that are leaving. Now, in this year's budget, I can't remember the exact figure, or annual performance plan rather, but it's something like 8,600 that we have planned for. We are not planning to replace the number of teachers that we are losing. How are we going to turn that around? That's not in here. If you look at Funza Lushaka, which is an attraction tool, we are only about three quarters of the Funza Lushaka bursars are actually graduating, let alone being placed. So what are we doing about that? We are giving Funza Lushaka bursaries, for instance, to and this came up with a KZN presentation recently, for study in fields where we already have enough teachers. We are not targeting space skills with Funza Lushaka bursaries. So our attraction, Funza Lushaka is one tool, but attraction is not strong enough to match the attrition rate. Why are we not looking at retention? Also in the Center for Development and Enterprise report, and this has, I've had confirmation of this from DBE officials, that 33% of the teachers who are leaving the profession are aged between 30 and 39. Not retiring, they are leaving the profession between the ages of 30 and 39. What are we doing to retain those professionals? Now, when I raised the same question when the annual performance plan was presented by the Director General, the Director General and Minister, Deputy Minister Enver Soufti assured us as a committee that there were plans in place, that there is action being taken. This, what we're talking about now is teacher demand and supply, and I see absolutely nothing on that whatsoever. So where is the longer term is my bottom line question, but specifically with respect to attraction and retention. And then thirdly, Chair, I just want to refer to page 10 of the attachment and ask why this table reflects what it does. The table is Funza Lushaka graduates appointed as reflected on personnel from January to March 2012. The Eastern Cape is 0%. The Eastern Cape was allocated 254 Funza Lushaka graduates, and none of them were placed. There were 42 placed in the Eastern Cape, and those were graduates from previous years. But not one single Funza Lushaka graduate from this year. In KZN, 513 graduates were allocated, 44 were placed, or 9%. How can that possibly be? How can we be paying money to learners to go and study so that they can become teachers, and then we don't place them as teachers? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I will go directly to the conclusion part, not that I disregard the other information. But as you indicated, there is the question of reliability of that information. Having said that, my question will be threefold with regard to the new HR framework. Can we have an indication of the old HR framework? Because if we go to the new one, obviously, there must have been an old one. And I think that is the part that we're missing in the presentation. Let me also then ask, whilst I'm saying that, what is the guiding policies? Is it the PAM document as I know, or is there something else that has been put forward? Because I think the PAM document is settled to demand and supply. Not central, but it's one of those documents that should be, we should have an indication what's happening there. Chair, also, I think we've been shortchanged as well, in a sense, with the information. Because we don't have, although the presenters say we must have an holistic approach, but even the information that we got was not, in a way, put holistically. Let me indicate, what is the research, what is the latest research on this framework? And what is, if you have a model that you work on, let us know about it. If it is an augmented Merkel model, then we must know it is an augmented or is something from the Brazil that we use to look at the demand and supply and the utilization. Then the absenteeism rate is also an instrument or something that influences your demand and supply and utilization. So all those things have not been forwarded to us. That's why I say let's look at what is the old so that we can understand the new one. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. I know both these pages and the slides are not paged, but in my own paging, I'm on page 3, filling of vacancies. The first bullet. Yes. That bullet.
The PAM document, personnel.
Is at the center of what we need. Why we needed this this presentation. We had raised that during the workshop, and what we got during the workshop was not totally what was required. We are here today. We still need you to respond to that question. The broader strategy. In terms of how we're dealing with that. Not ensuring that the pastel is more efficient and so on, that we understand. It should be handled. But the issue is, as a country, how are we responding to what is a looming or a pending challenge that we'll be faced with in not so much of a distant future? That's all we needed. And again, I don't think we're getting that response. We'll be going to the third presentation to try and get exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's not much, yes, we appreciate the rest you're indicating to show that we are becoming or getting alive to the challenges of PAPEX, which I'll still raise at some question. Mm-hmm. But the bigger picture that we want to understand is that we must be able to tell the country we'll be ready to supply teachers through and through.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's what the country needs at some point. We don't have to say the age cohort of teachers was at 60, 50 to 60, and they're all gone. Therefore, there's a shortage. You know, I don't think the country will be ready for that. The country wants to know whether we're producing enough teachers to fill the vacancies, whether that is caused by retirement, resignation, death, or any other. Are we ready at every given point? Respond to that. More so with the challenge that is coming, to say that most of them will be exiting the system. Are we going to be ready at that point?
Mm.
We don't have to say, no, we could not plan well, we did not know, or these were the shortcomings. The country will be needing teachers. And that's all we're saying. Qualified teachers for that matter.
Mm.
You know, that's all we're saying. And I think when you go back, you'll be able to focus on that pacing. And then be able to respond to it. The other chair, what I know in terms of our system is that during my other life before I joined here, we used to get the department not ready on this because there's room for provision in teaching. But the system does not seem to actually talk to that. A teacher is contracted from the first day, almost as permanent. But when you go to the system, the teacher must first go for probation and be made permanent later on. But we don't actually administer that properly. So it's easy for one who comes in to be in like permanent when it was not supposed to be like that. I'm just raising it. But I know that unions as well get the department wanting in that particular one. But I don't want to go deeper into that now. My interest was, you had said all the departments, provincial departments, should change the status of teachers who are qualified, who are in the system on a temporary basis to permanent. My question is, why is it, or why does it seem like it can be easy, after the stroke of a pen, to change their status to permanent when they have not been made all the time? What were the initial problems? What are the challenges which we can just pass quickly without going deep into those now that we want to make them permanent? And that could not be possible yesterday, 2 months back, or last year. And all of a sudden it will be that easier. I think I'm interested on that one. So I think, Pastel, the system may not be wrong. Well, it may not have all the features that we need. Perhaps it should still be adapted as well as the system, if we want to continue with it. But I got a problem wherein the departmental officials allowed those who are administering Pastel to just fill it as they so wish, to fulfill particular obligations, knowing full well that what they're doing is wrong, just to ensure that you pay teachers. And today we want to rectify, because it has been happening for much longer, knowing that they are supposed to capture information. When the teacher comes into the system, obviously you know their major subject, whatever, whatever, that information is there. But somebody chooses to just pick on any random information to fill in, ensure that payment is done wrongly. Why did we allow that? But it's not the system that is wrong. It's somebody behind that system who had the information at their disposal, which they decided to fill in correctly, and they were left like that for a long time. And to me, I'm saying it's wrong. Even for our system not to talk to each other in terms of provinces, national and so on, at once. To me, it's wrong at this age. For instance, if you were to go to a bank today, you withdraw, you get there tomorrow. Won't tell you that you're still reconciling information, whether you withdrew yesterday or something. They tell you that yesterday you have withdrawn at this particular ATM. You can't withdraw more than that today. Why is our system failing to just give that basic information at once? That if somebody is captured in Limpopo, already national, you know, and it will be correct information. Not to say after 2 months that no, they're still captured, probably they're captured in the system, something that we don't know. 2 months down the line. I'm saying even if we were to give room, it should be perhaps a week or something. But the department national must always be having information at your fingertips. Once it's captured and it's the same system, it is passed throughout the country, then you must be able to have that information sitting in Pretoria once in the Eastern Cape is captured. But the last one, Chair, these temporary teachers. Is it the the quick one. This Pastel, not Pastel. We're saying we are not able to do the intake. But we know that across the country, particularly in the Eastern Cape, we're struggling to appoint temporary teachers. And we are saying we have got Funza Lushaka teachers who must be absorbed. And they are not being absorbed. And we're saying it's a problem. And I know it's a problem. But I'm saying, how do we hope to absorb them when in fact we have got excess teachers whom are not able to get on board, all of them, We've got temporary teachers. We've got the ones. And those temporary, it's not like they're not qualified. Many of them are qualified. We've got those that are produced by the system now. And we're saying most of them probably are attracted to urban areas, Western Cape and Gauteng. When in fact we are not even able to appoint the required temporary teachers in rural provinces. To me it's not about choice. Many of them are sitting unemployed. And we are struggling to have those in the system as temporary teachers to be absorbed. And I'm saying, I see a system that is not accommodating, you know, it's not able to take more, not receptive to those who are coming out of the system. And that is to clarify to us, how do we hope these ones coming out will enter the system when the system seems to be a bit closed? Thanks.
I think what you have to add on the advertisement, what conditions are there? Because I know when I received the bursary, when I was there to do my teacher's course, I had worked 4 years for the department. Now before I could move anywhere. So you have to pop up the question later on from Michael Baylor guys. You say you're struggling in the rural areas. We used to say in the rural areas if there are problems. Honourable Mkhonshana?
Chair, I've got one question. But let me preface my question by this remark. Sipata is the president because she was at the workshop. Some of our requests may not have been conveyed to her properly because I remember at the workshop, I think I particularly raised that one, that the department could move from some generalities to specifics. And I put research to tell us if Eastern Cape research to move from saying the Eastern Cape needs 240 teachers to say in what categories that the Eastern Cape teachers, how many in mathematics, how many in science, how many in history do we need that the Eastern Cape needs such teachers. So that we have a sense of the situation and the demand, because I talk about the demand and supply of teachers. So if one could perhaps in the next round of presentation could have that, if possible, that's a general comment. I just want to link the next one to what I've just said. From some quarters, there has been a call for the reopening of teacher colleges. The IP has made that call as well. And the president, in one of his State of the Nation address, in fact, did say that. But my question is, according to your statistics, would that call still be justified? What is the picture? If the IEP for research calls for the reopening of colleges, would you say that call is misplaced because of the number of teachers that you have in the system? Because they got, I don't have that sense, because one wouldn't want to do things as Americans say by hand, you know, just by my own feelings. We just want empirical data. That is, this is, for instance, the Human Research, the Human Science Research Council, they come with a report, a scientific report, to say in 10 years' time, we'll be needing 30,000 teachers. That's what it said. What are you saying? I don't have that data from what you have presented. Perhaps I would also be guilty of the realities, but that's what I would like to see in your presentation. And lastly, that's one question. This capturing. Thank you, Chair, for your generosity. This capturing of data Now, when I was still principal, there will be quarterly returns, annual returns. You give the exact, each school will give the exact number of teacher that school needs. Have you done away that system? Because it seems now that the department is trying to shoot in the dark. And what is happening below the district or the school, not below the school, below the district and the second, are schools still involved in supplying that information, that crucial information? And during my time, there would be no... let me not go back. I'm becoming nostalgic unnecessarily.
And I share your
nostalgia. The situation that compels me to be that nostalgic.
I think we're done, Prof.
Thank you.
I share it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I had a lot of questions. I wasn't in the workshop, so you'll pardon me if not. I'll keep referring. I want to indicate why I have a lot of questions and I was not in the workshop. When you had your workshop, I believe I was beyond halfway towards the final human destination. But I think I'm now okay, and I want to cover up what I lost when I was there. Chairperson, I want to know something about the power of the department to transfer teachers. Maybe I'm a little behind with this. When I was young, he speaks about being nostalgic. When I was a young teacher, I was very ambitious. I remember at a very, very early age, I applied for a post of a principalship in one of the technical institutions. I was denied the post and appointed in that very same school as a senior teacher without having made an application. And I objected. But because the department had the power to transfer, they forced me to go to that school to be under the person with whom I competed for the post, who had lower qualifications than I had, and I had just to do it. Now, I'm looking at this because I see here, it's like the department can't transfer teacher. Of course, during our time, there were no unions. Maybe that is another element that I don't say we must do away with unions, but I think it does help the teacher, but I don't know if I can get, you know, just an answer as to whether the department can transfer a teacher. Because if we say we have got a temporary teachers, qualified temporary teachers, if a post exists somewhere, a permanent post where you need a relevantly qualified teacher in that post, and you have somewhere as a temporary teacher, I believe you can transfer the teacher to fill up the position so that you have no problem. But I'm not sure. That's why I say maybe if I get some clarification about, you know, the power of the department to transfer teachers. Because if it has, then the question of rural and urban will not really be relevant here. That was the first question. Forget about the comments or the remarks about being ambitious. Let's look at this Funda bursaries. Here it says, I just want to read the last portion of the sentence. They do not have contingency plans for unanticipated vacancies, resignations, and death. I'm not very clear there. Does it mean if somebody dies, it will take long before the position is filled? Or what does this really mean? And if that is the case, one would wonder why that should take place, because again, it's a question of these many qualified teachers occupying temporary positions. Why not? I mean, again, it goes back to the question of the power to transfer. Because you could simply, I mean, if you have things, you can shift them from one shelf to the other. If one shelf is empty and the other is overloaded, you can't stay with that. You move one to, that's what is in my head. Now, the big question here is, if you have given, I think it's indirectly linked to Lavmo's question about these people who have qualified. Obviously, when you give them bursaries, there is a purpose. You know why you give that person a bursary, to fill up, you know, the gaps. Now, if you have things like some are not available for various reasons, those reasons that we do not know, I get surprised. Because personally, I would say that you said, when one completes, if you are given a bursary, when you complete under normal circumstances, you work for the person who gives you the bursary for the same number of years that you have been training. If you have been given a bursary for 4 years, when you complete, you know you owe the department or whoever gave you the bursary 4 years of service. And again, it's a question of whether you can place this person anywhere. Because when you give bursaries, obviously you're filling gaps. It's not for this person to tell you where he wants to be. No. Otherwise, what you see, sometimes when we speak about these things, people think it is apartheid thinking. It's not. It's not apartheid thinking. Yeah. It's just logic. Yeah. If you give a person a bursary, when he completes, you look at the place where you need him, place him there for 4 years. And then, after 4 years, well, he's free to go where he wants to go. That could be part of attrition. So, I have some problems about this, because actually my questions are more linked to what was happening in the past. And we always want to avoid talking about what happened in the past, because people think we want to go back to the party. There's no good who wants to go there. I mean, there isn't a person who wants to go back to that, but people deliberately say when you see some good things that were happening, that could really assist us to go forward. People say, no, but you have to the party here. I'm not there. I'm not in that category. The only thing is, let us do things the correct way. If you give a person a bursary, you have to have all the control. The money is yours. Place him where you want to place him. You can place him in Western Cape. You can place him in Limpopo. Anywhere where you want him for that same number of years you give him that bursary. After the period, let him go, let him fly. No problem. That is now two questions.
No,
you didn't understand the question and the comment, please. I'm now dealing with questions, not comments. But if you say so because of the chairperson, let me respect you. Thank you very much.
You are not telling us to apart, but you are telling us to refuse.
Yeah.
Thank you, chairperson.
That's right.
If you are number, I don't know what number. Yeah. By the time you ask questions, you have asked all the questions that you wanted to ask. But I'm going to ask one person. I hope I'll ask it to be on feeling of the test. And I want to attach it to really to on the ground, because I went to a Hatha school yesterday when I was shocked. I come to that list. But then, if the department learned for vacancies that are in education, because they know that people will retire, why do we still have the challenge? Because people who have to retire is determined by the age. You know that so many teachers will be leaving. So I don't think we should be filled with a new challenge. The department will be planned according to that. Because if you know that 50 people will be leaving at this point, you must have the plan to do something about it. Unless if you just put it down for sex only. I want to believe that a plan is there so that you avoid feeling the challenge when such a time. But then, like I said, I want to maybe to schools that will be the favor, this type of school that will be good at the school. Where there are nine vacancies. Nine, you know, there are like nine teachers. They are less. The post establishment. Dictated that they must have 49 by their own, they are supposed to be 49, but they are 39. It's one of the many schools. I'm sure members can come with a lot of that, but I got this information. And I was very much concerned that if we have 10 educators less in a school, how do they teach?
in one particular school is not a very big school. And this is the reality. What can we do? Because we know. What can we do to avoid that? Because we can't stop educators. It's unfortunate that here when we talk of freedom of the department tells us about when they talk of inevitable, they talk of returning. Why can't they add this issue of educators who come into the field? And of course there is something like the outside they say, think about where the lot of those, they can't wait to go where it's greener. And you can't gain this because people work for, you want to improve your life, you work if there is something better, people can do that. And we've got a lot of young educators who just come in and for example, the municipality has become the biggest employer. And if they open up, of course, educators or educators, and we can't do this because that we live so that we improve our life. You can do it very fast, fine. Now, is there a plan to deal with this? Because we know it's not something that comes as a surprise. It's known that so many educators will be leaving. There should be a plan somewhere. We need plan number two. We understand that provincial education departments are planning they are planning for various things that are granted, but we need a plan that's going to solve the very things that we're talking about. Otherwise, we'll come in here and speak all the things that we know, and nothing is going to happen down there. It's not about we need to change the situation down there. Because it's not going to you go there to find the reality down there that it's dictating that something should be done. And I hope we'll come to the plan and not just to be a spokesman. Yes, we can afford every Tuesday and every Tuesday to come and just talk for 2 weeks. Definitely not taking us anymore. We can't definitely, you know that next Tuesday will be sitting here. It depends on how good you can put your speech. You come next Tuesday, it's the same thing. But are we not working time? Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Professor. Like, Honorable Shanek just indicated that most of the questions have already been asked. I'll just ask one question. I heard that the presenter talked about converting temporary teachers into permanent proposed. I just want to know what it is going to happen and what is their plan about the converting temporary teachers into permanent proposed. And the second one is on the I think one of my colleagues has said about contradiction of the around the consistent of the of reported British educators. I just want to know the play on that subject. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. My comment would be it looks like committee and department at times speak past each other. Because as far as I can remember, we've been convening about inaccurate data. Then my question would be, what is the problem with the information management system in the department? Is the manager still employed? Well, my second question relates to the issue of teacher training. The figures that I saw indicate that numbers are bigger in Gauteng and the Western Cape. In the Eastern Cape, where you need more, the need is bigger for a qualified teacher in each and every class. Teacher training is, should I say, a visa? Okay, I say nothing. Lastly, to me it appears that your strategies are evergreen. Evergreen. And my understanding is that in a strategy you have issues that you can take now and be done away with. You also have medium range issues that you can tackle in, say, 1 to 5 years. You also have long-range issues or long range plans rather, that can tackle your amateur missiles in a period of say 10, 15 years or 10, 25 years. I don't see the timelines in your strategy or tactics. Is it three questions already? Thanks, Ben.
I'm not going to ask you a question. Just switch off your mic, Uncle Hanyako.
Oh.
I'm not going to ask many questions. But what I would like to know, because you touch organization the organizational structure that is the organogram. What is important there? When it comes to our different provinces, were these organograms approved by the Department of Public Service and Administration? Because I know the organogram of the Eastern Cape was never approved because it's top heavy. So I think that is going to be important. We must know that, you know, whether it was approved of each province. Then the payroll. Where is it situated? The system. Because I know the Eastern Cape is situated in the Premier's office. So you have to say, where is it situated? We do visit schools. Principals do cover up for each other. But others don't cover up for each other. Because while the school are visited, where the principal, man was, the principal, acting principal of the school was HLD. And it is when this payroll sheet comes, the document. When it comes to the principal, he doesn't sign them. Because the principal is missing from the school. You know, now that I think is the problem people are having with the education part in our basic. Therefore, on Romanic and Day, it's evergreen. So in the beginning stages. Therefore, the Honourable Mukwan Shwana can say week after week doing the same thing. Because there are three things. I put it down. And I want it to do 10 days at the end. We want it in 10 days time. And if we're going to sit and work, we are going to do it for the next 10 days that we can get it. Because I think that is important. Monitoring and evaluation. Monitoring tools. What tools to have in place? Because that is important too. And you know what you tend to forget? When we sit here, we listen to you. I'll refer to the Eastern Cape. There were 62 people in one of your reports that was placed for the Kunza and South of Burberry. But now it went down to 42. We had a report on 62 in the meeting. And I had a report in the Eastern Cape on Port Elizabeth 162. Now you're speaking about 42. You have to be careful when it comes to your figures. Because you're going into your annual report. And when it comes to the annual report, this that we are asking now is at the back in the annual report, your HR strategy. And then we can compare this to that. We look at the post-provisioning norm. I think what's written out there is 64,000 plus. Eastern Cape is on 47. It is a big mistake. Eastern Cape is only 64,000. It's the second biggest province after KwaZulu-Natal. Because it wasn't 64. It was in 64 my time when I was there. It was on 64,000. It's supposed to be 64 plus. Thank you. Answer these questions, please.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me start by responding to questions. Firstly, I must indicate that we have deliberately provided you with documents additional so that it could assist us to, in terms of responding, because we have anticipated quite a number of questions that are going to come. But based on what we perceive to be the key issues, we just looked into all the issues that are providing pressure points to the system that result that
we can't actually manage supply and demand, which is the issue around the filling of vacancies, which would ensure that the right teacher at the right school. I must just refer you to page 15 of this document. This one. Yes, which speaks to the output and activities led by the Department of Higher Education ourselves in the integrated strategic planning framework, which speaks around the issue of retention. That output speaks more on the expanded and accessible formal child education system is established. What I can report to you now is that already there are plans in place, and one I think is operational in Mpumalanga on the establishment of these formal child education centers. One is would be in the Eastern Cape to be established, one in Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, as well as in Limpopo. So there's progress in that regard, because I think the issue of how do we ensure that we don't get a shock wave after a period of time? I thought I'd be able to provide additional resource documents in terms of that, those specific aspects. I think it's important to indicate the fact that when we reported here, we did report that there is a challenge around the management of the system. We reported that. But this is important for us to report, as required by the portfolio committee, to say that, look, this is what the system is providing us, but these are the challenges. But we did not only end at identifying challenges, but we said, what is it that we ought to do in order for us to deal with the challenges? That is why our presentation clearly defines the issue of the intervention that we're coming up with on how best do we assist provinces to clean up the federal system. It is not only about cleaning up the federal system. How do you hold those managers accountable who are managing that system? That's what we have reported to say that besides us just giving you information, but we are provided with information with clear indication as to what the intervention would be that we're entering in. Now, there's a side that I wanted to speak to, this one, that was the slide. The slide, which, sorry. Yeah, there's a slide here which really speaks about Limpopo in particular, to see that the numbers were quite less in Limpopo, whether that was a good reflection. That particular slide spoke specifically around the temporary appointment of the book government. That's the number. Speaks about the temporary appointment, not the teachers in the system. I want to emphasize that. It speaks about the temporary appointment of teachers who are permanent, who are qualified. That's what it says. And it does not say precisely because of that information. It therefore speaks about how many unqualified teachers are there in the system. It does not speak to that matter. I needed just to clarify that aspect. Then a very important issue that I think it is important for us to raise. You see, the reason why there was intervention in Limpopo in particular, one of those was around the filling of vacancies in Limpopo. Because there were a lot of educators in the system who were said to be in excess, and there were schools without teachers. That was a big problem in the province. When there was that particular intervention, we had to go and sit down with unions and with the officials to find a mechanism of dealing with the problem. Hence we had a resolution that was signed, I think it was around about March, which unions and everybody agreed on the movement of teachers and dealing with the vacancies that were there in the schools. So there is a management plan that is there in the province. I think it is important that maybe as we are dealing with interventionists, also to look into all those issues matters whether there is movement. But I can tell you that there is movement in terms of ensuring that there is a decent fund of the transport in the province. There's an issue around whether are we still collecting data as a system, with a 10-day information system. Yes, that process is continuing. That's why we could be able to tell you that how many children are there in the country. It's because of that information that we are capturing. How many teachers are there? That system is continuing, is being carried. I think the more important aspect is about how does that data is utilized with regard to the issues of supply and demand. In order for us to apply the information much more accurately. The reason why we have a mechanism that we have put in place as a department was that we needed to have the HEDCOM subcommittee. Because it was reported this thing to HEDCOM, even also to CEM. But furthermore, we felt that it is important for us to regularly monitor the provinces on a quarterly basis on what is occurring in terms of these aspects that we have raised. We had a meeting now in August, wherein they indicated some form of the improvement in the setup, because it's very, very clear where we are situated at national level for us to engage provinces on a regular basis, so that we can see whether there is would there be an improvement in terms of the aspects that you have raised, whether it's about the placement of the researcher. It's part and parcel of the tool that we are using for them to report to us. So by the time we come back here, that's why we said it is important for us to have a start to report on these matters, but to also for us to be afforded an opportunity when we come back again, we're able to go to indicate what instruments are we having in place for us to monitor the aspects in the different provinces. And be able to come up with figures, because it is important to show whether is there a shift in terms of what we are doing in those particular provinces. There's an issue around dealing with the retention strategy, which there were questions around that. We always talk about the catch training programs, which educators themselves are being trained on the curriculum assessment and policy statement from time to time, so that there should be no disjunction between policy and implementation of policy. That is why when we talk about learning areas, it is as needed to be grasped in a particular aspect. If you look at the skills development learning, provinces are utilizing that precisely to deal with the issue of how best do you ensure that teachers are really upgraded first and they understand the content knowledge that they are dealing with. So the presentation here does not in any way talks about the short-term or long-term view, but it was responding to some of the issues that were raised. So what are these pressure points that we find ourselves in the provinces? We have decided, we have also provided you with a document again, which is this one, which we understood that there might be questions about whether we are dealing with representing the entire strategy or the framework as such, but we are dealing with some of the issues that arose from the workshop, and I've realized that we have not captured all of them, which is an oversight on our part. Whether I was there or not there, but I needed to have been able to have increased in that regard. That's why we dealt with those points of excess educators, temporary educators, as well as the issues of vacancies as the key issues. And what is it that we need to deal to in order to deal with them? So in terms of the different studies that people research to, we in the department, we can also confirm that I spoke about the attrition rate that was 2.4, consistent with the report that will be once it is finalized, is approved, so that it becomes a public domain. We'll provide you with it. It's the research that we've also conducted, which indicates that the attrition rate over a period of years has been almost like 2,500 educators, the attrition rate. Now, that is precisely why we felt it is important for us just to highlight that particular fact. Not that it is in contradiction with any that maybe you have done, that people are talking about 25,000, whatever, but we have done something internally which we are going to release. This talks also to the multiplicity of plans that we are dealing with in terms of the recruitment. Hence, in collaboration with the Department of Higher Education, we are talking about the establishment of the colleges. Hence, we are starting with the four provinces, and work is already underway in Mpumalanga, as I was speaking, to deal with some of those challenges. Yes, there's a problem about if you go to a province like your Eastern Cape in particular, on the intake of Funza Lushaka in particular. And the reason that when we were engaging with officials, it was clear about the excess educators. You see, you've got a system where you've got excess educators in the system, you've got temporary educators, now they are also Funza Lushaka. That's us. In the same province. Now, the failure to move educators or to deploy educators into an area of need or into a school results in that school having to have a temporary educator. Now, that provides the system with the challenges that we're managing in the Eastern Cape currently. And I must emphasize that you are correct when you say that do we have systems in place around the movement of teachers, deployment of teachers? The answer is yes. And there's a collective agreement to that matter. But the challenge is always provinces, it is the implementation. Mm-hmm. It is always the implementation. Hence, we needed to highlight these issues so that you understand as well, and also be able to indicate what is it that we put in place in order to deal with those particular challenges. We have to go into the Eastern Cape and indicate to the provincial officials that this is a critical matter, because if it is not resolved on time, the compensation of employees in the province will be a problem. Remember that every September, the declaration on the EPN by the MEC, and this it needs to be implemented. Now, when you declare with the staff that is available in the system, and that staff that is available in the system, some of them, that's why we talk about double part and vacancies, we have to come in and come up with contingency plan in terms of ensuring, practically ensuring, that we come with they revive the provincial education labor relations council so that the movement it has collapsed in the Eastern Cape. We came in to revive it so that things can happen in the province for the movement of the teachers and deal with the temporary teachers currently. I need to indicate on those matters. There are critical questions that Honorable Makubela raised around the plans. See, if you have a person who has been temporary for too long in the system, occupying a substantive post, now, the rationale in terms of the labor laws is such that it negates the processes that were supposed to have been followed. It negates it because processes were not followed properly. That one of ensuring that a teacher comes into the school, from the school, you know that the teacher will be going through a probation period, and from the probation period, we go towards permanence. But what you see in provinces practically happening is that we've got temporary teachers that will be demonstrated that have been occupying substantive posts but temporary for a longer period of time. What do you do in that situation? That is why it is important that we don't think that it is, as you're saying, it is an easy thing to do. But under the circumstances, it is important to clean the system from where we're seated. If you look at the, you're correct, honourable members, about the personal administration. It might maintain the system. If there's no accountability, it becomes a problem. Hence, we are talking, hence the presentation looked specifically on the issue of accountability, of how you ensure that you hold those managers who are responsible for managing personnel, are held accountable. Because any wrong information that is fed into the system will result into the wrong output. So I think we concur. Although this might think the issue that we have raised is quite important around management issues, whether you talk about leave and absenteeism and how do you manage people. Because there are quite a number of educators in the system that are actually on leave because of ill health. It's how that we manage those things. And I think it coincides with what another honourable member raised on the issue of leave management. That, I think it's a very good I think issue for us to follow up. So that as part and parcel of the tools that we are developing in order to monitor what is happening in provinces, this issue of leave management needs to get tucked in within that particular monitoring instrument. The other issues that you raised, I would, because there are quite a number of them. But if you talk about that the inaccurate data, we have considered ourselves. We never said that it is the data that we're providing to you to say, here is what we are getting from PESAS. We know that the challenge is, but this is what we want to do in order to correct the situation. Thank you very much. If there are any that I've holistically dealt with, I'll be able to come there and deal with them.
Just hold on. Is there anyone else in the department that would like to speak? The most we are the presenter. You can go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just the issue of the Gonzalo Shaka versus. Honourable members, there is a contract in place, a very definitive contract that ensures or stipulates that the Funza Lushaka graduate, having benefited from the finances of studying, will go out into the schools for that particular period of 4 years and serve the schools. But included in that is that we need to place those Funza Lushaka graduates within 3 months of them qualifying. The posts are identified. The graduates are moved to those schools. The graduate then turns the post down based on inhumane conditions of where they're going. There are no ablution facilities. There are no hospital facilities. They are unable to take on posts because they cannot live there. Or they're getting married and they want to move to another post. So why I'm telling you this is because it's a very complex placement process. And as much as we want to say to them, there is the post in the Eastern Cape. You have benefited from the bursary program. You will go and teach there. Which was not the case when we were posted out to the schools, when we got our bursary. For whatever reason, it cannot work like that at the moment. In the current educational context. As a result, we are not able to merely move the graduates to those posts, even though they're contractually obligated to fill in those posts. Thank you.
I think what's going to be important now, because it's
excuse me, honourable chairperson, there's a question that was not asked. We have not responded to it adequately. That honourable Bojana raised on the specific of issues around if you talk about the vacancy or whatever, if it's linked to a specific learning area, mm-hmm. whether you it is more about issue profiling in this regard. What we've done in the system with DPSA in particular was to do a is it called HR Connect, wherein we are profiling every educator in the system. Once you have profiled those educators, you'll then be able to have the detail of every educator. But if there's a need in terms of the question that has been raised, you are able to do the placement. Over and above what we spoke about earlier on the issue of how do we then, in terms of the intervention that we're coming up in the personal plan, to really deal with these particular issues, also not just what we are doing with the Department of Public Service and Administration, but also what do we fit in into the personal system, so that we can have that information relevant and ready for ourselves. Then we'll then be able to respond to that question that has been raising quite adequately. I think we have not responded to that question. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. What I want to do, I'll give each one question. And if you feel there's a question that was not answered, just say it. It's either one question or just a comment. I'll start with Andrew Hayako, and I'll go to Sanjana, then I'll go to Mahubera, and then I'll go to Smile, and then I'll go to Arabic Chakra.
I'm not going to ask this question, but I'm going to just ask to a memorial service.
We are going to memorial, not the hospital. Yes.
Yes. The comment she made about people who receive bursaries,
mm-hmm.
who will say, I can't go there because of A, B, C, D. I don't know what the department does in relation to that. Because one would expect that this person who doesn't want to go there owes the department. He can go anywhere. Now he falls under another category of people who actually owe the department. Because once you put it very clearly that you don't go, the money that we have paid for your training should come back. It's simple. So you will make a decision there. That is why in my case, when I was competing for a post with somebody who was less qualified, and I was denied the post but was given a post there without my having applied, I just had to go there because they said, if you don't go, you don't have a post where you are teaching right now. Remember, when the schools reopen, you don't have a post. You must decide. Then I have no choice. It looks like apartheid, but it isn't. It isn't apartheid. So I think it's not really a question but a comment, you know, in relation to this issue of I don't want to go to Limpopo, I don't want to go to the Eastern Cape. You have to go there. Why did you go to the university in the first place? But then,
of course.
Simple.
Of course.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to hear what the reaction of the department is to this question. Because the department realized some time ago that it was hampered in its role in placing, especially the first, the teachers were entering the system for the first time, and piloted a bill which became law, which conferred some powers to the department to do what is the correct term? To bypass certain procedures like the bulletin, the interviewing processes. What has happened to that law? I think the 2000 Laws Amendment Act, which gave the department those powers. What has happened? Why are you not implementing the requirement, the second of that law, if I remember correctly? No. I think it was 2000 Laws Amendment Act, which specifically gave the department some powers to bypass certain procedures like the bulletin, the interviews. They could place some teachers where they are needed. That's that law is there. Why is it not being applied?
So, I think next time we meet the department, it will be proper to move a step forward, other than coming to say these are the pressures we have, this is what we're doing, and so on and so on, sort of the intervention. Perhaps we'll need to be taken on board in terms of how far are we in terms of those interventions, progress being made. And how long will it take to realize some conclusions or completion of the interventions? If we say we're dealing with pastel and there are issues being done, when are we envisaging conclusion in that? To can then say in the next year or 2 years to come, that will have been dealt with and we'll see the results. Not that we won't be seeing certain things now, but when are we concluding that? So that we know when to then hold you accountable on that. There's a debate going on in terms of what do we mean by an organogram. There's a school of thought that says you can develop a picture of this is your ambition. You want to see the department this way without having to cost every vacancy. But the argument coming with the department, which is another school of thought, says you only talk to the organogram in terms of that which you can fund. Now, these are two contending views. My view will be that you can have both. For accountability purposes, only talk to the standard post, as you want to be saying. But I think it would be wrong for all of us to then say provinces, for instance, should not have on paper elsewhere, without having to account on it, an ideal organogram that they will need to do. For instance, if they support for more money, for more funding, they must know what are those positions. You can't say, I need more money to fill positions, I will still structure that once I've got one. But then your plan ready to say, this is what we'll need ideally. But then they account, and who they've deployed for work, only focus on those which will be funded. And I'm just saying, you can even comment on that, why you think the latter becomes the most important one than utilizing both. If chairs, you're getting what I'm trying to get into, but I think they understand the argument that I'm raising.
And you have to just bring in the school of thought, where, of course, according to the new model of public administration, it's supposed to be lean top, bottom area, the district is supposed to be area. So bring all those thoughts in.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just get from the department whether the National Development Plan issues are taken on board in the new HR, specifically with regard to the proposal of a better learner-teacher ratio, 1:22. So I think we need to find out whether, that has been taken on board. Having said that, also about the NDP chair, I think I would like to commend the department on the strategy on the Funza Lushaka to promote and say, go and study this, we will make sure that you get a bursary. Because I'm going to Sterkspruit tomorrow and see, because there's a problem with Afrikaans, there's a shortage of Afrikaans teachers in Sotho. So that is the problem, and I said to the Mrs. Kandana, can you not identify learners and send them to Free State University, tell them to study Sotho and come back, because that is the only one, that's one way of dealing with it. Mm. Otherwise, Chair, thank you. Let me stop.
Chair, I'm coming back to my long-term, my concern about long-term, and I'd like to refer briefly to the human resources planning framework. On page 41, it talks about placement demand, and it says policies around improvement of conditions of service, working conditions, should therefore be aimed at improving retention. On page 47, it says there is currently no system in place for the recruitment of teacher personnel, and therefore a strategy is required. At the end, there is a table which says priority areas for implementation for 2012-2013. In fact, commences before then. One of them, number 8 on the table, is commission a study on demand and supply to establish future teacher needs. The anticipated result or impact is reliable information on teacher shortages and scarcity. The duration is July 2011 to March 2012. It clearly hasn't been done, but my question is there anything in the department that is looking at the long-term needs, yes or no? Is there anything in the department that is looking at the long-term needs with respect to teacher supply and demand? Thank you, Chair.
Regarding the organization structure that you mentioned, as well as the honorable member, what we have suggested to the provinces is that we use two organization structures. The one that you commented on in terms of the one that would be signed off and approved by DPSA, which is our ideal structure. We're not wanting to get provinces to remove critical posts or anything like that. Because when they go out to argue for more money, then they know that's the ideal structure to make that department work. What we also say to them is that for a particular financial year, look at your funded posts
and capture on Patel your organization structure, your operational organizational structure for that year, so that you can then determine your conservation budget. You can accurately then peg how much you need for those costs in that org structure. That was the advice that was given to them. What do we do with those Funza Lushaka versus who do not take the post? There are two types or two situations that we've got to look at. The first is, was that post given to that Funza Lushaka versus before or after the 31st of March? If it was after the 31st of March, their contractual obligations fall away. But if it is before the 31st of March and they were allocated a post, they effectively have to take on that post. However, there's a twist in the tail. Are we as, or is PED, as the employer of that Funza Lushaka bursa, able to provide that bursa with the minimum living conditions to take on that post? And that is where we get caught. And it is a huge challenge in the rural areas. We want the Funza bursa to travel 200 k's every day or 400 k's every day from a place where they've got minimum living conditions to go and teach in an area. And they're not able to live in that area because they don't have the necessary living conditions. So that's where we're struggling in terms of facing the Funza. Contractual obligations are clear, but in terms of the humane situation, it becomes problematic. Thank you.
So the chart comes last.
How about the teacher? How about the person who has given money to go and study? You know, can you not even pay for himself or herself? Then we have. I don't know, Dr. Maria, I don't say you are close to them, but I think there is some sort of striking of a balance
between
the because all the time we've been meeting a teacher in those areas, we have teachers there who are classified, taken from their own pocket. At the same time, we cannot just say those who don't need the government to give them money can have such a choice. I don't think you must move them, but there's a balance sort of between the society in the area, of which maybe it needs a further discussion. But I don't think we can leave it standing loose the way we are
responsible.
I should think where you put your money on. You must have a proper control system, and you must have a proper monitoring system. Everyone who's accepting money from the department, that person must be controlled under that condition, and that must be stipulated on the application form before a person is administered under that particular fund. And also, I must say, all those who have been trained with Funza Lushaka, they must be monitored thoroughly. Whether they work for the department for 3 years or 4 years, are these people working for that period, completing the period, or they just run away to the private sectors and so on? I should think the monitoring and the control systems, they should be in place. Thanks.
No, I agree with honourable members that this condition should be revisited. I know that we came up with the new strategy that we distributed, which is district-based, that's focusing on the rural areas as well. But I think the issue around us to really look into the conditions, so that if you deploy a person, the person can provide you with choices, maybe that problem second and third. But something to that effect, and around issue of monitoring, I think we concur. We'll revisit the conditions so that it is really about learners at the end of the day, because otherwise it is going to give us some progress.
I think we accept the a lot of not questions, but what is it that we need to consider when we return back to the office around providing clear time frames on the interventions, so that when we come back, we are able to report progressively on all matters that we presented, to say that we're here, this is where we are, so that you don't lose the first. I think that is important. It is, I must say, in terms of that, the one that was the famous that we are developing, that we are, we've heard about this one from the Planning Commission on how we need to look into it. We have not incorporated because something is a new phenomenon that has been introduced. And once we're doing our own timing, but it's how best we put the two together at the end of the day, so that we are in line. Once it is becoming blueprinted and adopted by Parliament, we don't have to work outside. Then it means we need to align our strategies with the broad legislative requirements of government. We cannot move outside that particular document. There are realities in peculiar to specific districts that you highlighted, because it was striking for us about the lack of Sesotho in a Sesotho area.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the area that you're speaking about, I also saw that we've got a problem of South Sesotho. And yet we are very close to Lesotho as well as Free State in the area that you're referring to, as well as Afrikaans. I think that I did engage the district manager as well on what is that ought to be done. I'm sure part and parcel of the strategy that the province needs to look into, or maybe ourselves, is just to look at those subjects that really are serious problems. I know that the focus is much more broadly on math and science, but it is important that we need to look at even other learning areas that are peculiar to specific districts at the end of the day. Maybe the district plan might ask us also in that regard. Yes, there is a long-term plan around the issue of AR. And in particular, the TDF, its application, and whether we need to revisit it, maybe the formula itself, but there is a study that the department is engaged with in this regard. You ask the question whether is there something that maybe the department is really dealing with. Yes, there is a study that has been commissioned to deal with this matter.
Commissioned.
Yes, commissioned.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
I think we can already use it, but before we do that, I think it's important for us and even the department to know that when it comes to basic education, the learner is the main bus driver, including your educator, including the officials. In a previous meeting, we were interested in your retention. What comes with retention?
Attraction.
Oh, yes. Attraction, sir. Retention, retention, and your extra policy. And I think that HR had it with a committee in 10 days' time. That's how we can read it. So that you come back again. You know, we've got to understand of that. The Honourable Kubela spoke to HR. Your HR and our skills development strategy. Have you got to do? Because the department first have one, HR and skills development strategy. Because you gave us your framework. And the framework seems down to catch others. The framework seems to be outdated. Yes. So we'd like to have that we can read through and then I'll talk. You know, the way you are doing things. Then when it comes to accountability, you come back because you said it's work in progress. When is this performance agreement going to be in place when it comes to these managers? Because these people have to be disciplined. Because it's those people that are putting ghosts on the system. You know, when it comes to your personnel. And then the other thing, you spoke to organogram, but I think it will be important for us to know when it comes to your different provinces, whether, you know, the organograms were approved, that we know what is happening. And then when it comes to bulletins too, I guess we spoke to this Act of 2000 amendment. I think we have to look and see where it is. Because like in the different provinces, we have teachers that teach in every 4 years temporary. And we know you're supposed to be 1 year temporary so you can become permanent. And those things are not happening in the different provinces. So we have to look at that. And then, distinction, HR. And then two, education is labor intensive. And we know we're having problems when it comes to the ratio, 80 is 20. Because you know, like in one province it's 91 is 9. So when you come back, speak to that to tell us what are you going to do. Because we noticed the one report where a province is using its capital funding for personnel, and it's illegal. And then also that section I put in the Constitution of 125, do you know what is happening in the province? Use that 125, because I believe you're having a LECOM meeting next week, because I received a letter to say that management won't be available next week. There's yes, written, the DPE is our LECOM workshop next week, which means that all our senior managers will not be available for a PC briefing scheduled for next week. So in that meeting, the proposals we are making now and what we are speaking about now, speak up in that meeting. Because these things, our meetings, we have meetings with you, is not a waste of time.
No, shouldn't we?
Because we expect the following week that to come with something. Or we expect you to tell us what are you doing about our recommendation, like you did in workshop. So, whatever you do next week, have a fruitful meeting. And I think that's close the meeting because it's definitely, they said, a memorial. So next week, people, read out, come next week. And you tell me you didn't go through a minute. You tell me you didn't go through a full report. You tell me you didn't go through appropriations. You tell me you didn't go through the Port Elizabeth report. Go through, and I can't forget. Come back and tell. You want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 added. But when it comes to recommendations, don't give the department to many. Just focus on 5. Now we will say disciplinary action. Let us just focus on that then. And then reports that we really need. I'd like to thank you for the meeting. I found it very interesting. And I think this was something very important because this didn't come from me as a chairperson, that's what you said in the different meetings we should have. And I'd like to thank you for that. And then even these people that disturbed the meeting, I thought it was only Honorable Bonshana, but I found out it's Honorable Lavmo, it's Honorable Nina.
Will they come back just to tell us what has happened to the provisions of that data?
Yeah, that's why I said it's their homework. Because if we are all teachers and we say that, come back with our homework we're giving them. Thanks a lot for this meeting. Thank you.
We'll arrange.
We'll
arrange. We'll come back to see
that. But we have to look at the thing, the review of the policy. I will be available on the 7th.
Most people are only available on the 6th, so you're not available, or you don't get the council, because the federal council is on the 1st.
Oh yeah, that's right. Some people will remain here. Let me do it this way. Let me attend the 31st because I've got a school function, you know, about job creation and stuff. A school function in Marobar, which I've already committed my life to. On 31st, yeah. But let me attend and then just leave earlier. Then. from that meeting? What is the time frame?
No, but I've been asked to make it if it's on Friday, to make it earlier. That is intended.
Yeah.
I said, Jennifer, we must start earlier, like half past 8 o'clock.
And then we meet at 12 o'clock so that I can be in the yard, I'm sure.
Standardizing, so you don't need it.